Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And here we are doing a two-hour special today, unexpectedly. And then next week we go back to regular programming, so they tell me. And I've been away, and I'm going to talk to you about my being away, about something that happened that was just amazing learning experience. But first, I want to talk to you about my background, because this is going to lead us into what we're going to talk about. My background: in my earlier days, I was a very active therapist, workshop leader, one of those guys who were going around and people would follow, and I'd do a workshop with like 100 people or 200 people, and they would just experiment. It was experiential stuff where they could experience things. And they would go through practically anything that I would suggest, because they basically knew that my intention was good. So I'm going to tell you about one of my experiences. I was conducting a workshop in New Paltz, New York, in October of 1985. And while I was conducting this workshop, I thought up this intense exercise. Actually, it felt more like the exercise was thinking me up, the way I kind of watched the ideas come from who knows where. There were 23 men and 30 women registered for this workshop. It was held in a beautiful campsite that was usually used for the visual impaired people. This is in New Paltz. You may know which one it is. October was off season, so we were able to grab some fairly inexpensive rentals. We slept in dormitories and we all had meals together. Can you picture this? You know, I like to talk in terms of things that people could picture. I want you to visualize this. The workshop was in the main room, which had tall wooden beam ceilings and two big fireplaces. Now, during the workshop, we sat on the dorm mattresses. We pulled the mattresses out of the dorms to use them as cushions to sit on. And for this segment, for this exercise, I asked people to give me the mattresses to build a house-like structure. And this was a house-like structure, and I asked all of the men to sit inside the house. They did, and when they got inside, they closed the door behind them, which was another mattress. I then suggested that the women walk around the structure. It was about 4 feet high, 10 feet long, and 6 feet wide. So get the picture of this. We now have men inside a kind of artificial room in the middle of a room, and they have mattresses all around them. The mattresses are in a rectangle. They're supporting each other. The women were to think of this structure as housing all the significant men in their lives. I asked them to verbalize whatever feelings that they had never said to these important people, these male people in their lives. I suggested the women to speak as loudly as they could. I wanted to have it so that the men could hear it. In fact, I crawled into the mattress house. It was dark. It smelled of maleness. The guys were leaning against each other, silent but smiling, until the women started shouting. From underneath the cushion walled house, we began to hear the women yelling things like, "You never listen to me, you never listen to me," and other words like, "You're a coward." Anything and everything was obviously the bitter truth let loose. And the intensity of it came into that mattress house, so I slid out. The women were encouraged to express themselves as forcefully as they wished. They began hitting and kicking the mattress structures. There just happened to be a bunch of things called bataka bats around and some tennis rackets. So the men in the mattress house began to hear and feel the pounding on the walls. The screaming passed through all the cushion layers, and the men pressed together in silence. I took a brief visit to the inside with the men, and they were like huddled inside in what seemed to be a frozen terror. They couldn't even think of moving. The women were screaming through hoarse voices, and some were crying at the same time. And the men were actually feeling all of this coming at that. Imagine anything you ever wanted to say to every male. Now, I could have reversed this, of course, and had women on the inside, but women are used to getting beat on by men. This is a chance for the women to express themselves. It got so intense. They were kicking it. They were hitting it. And the guys were just, you know, taking it, but they started weeping because they were hearing the things that they always knew existed in the woman's unconscious. They knew what our maleness has done to women. And so when they were hearing it back, they began to feel it. So it was time to cool it. So I suggested that the women consider that those very men that meant so much to them, who lay under the mattress, were now dead. I said, now they're dead and they're under the mattress. It was time to say their last words and then to say goodbye. I further suggested that as they say goodbye, they slowly move out of the room and find a place to ponder the last few minutes. The mattress house now represented a mausoleum in which each woman's source of their anger lay dead. One at a time, they came over and delivered a eulogy. The mattress was soaked with tears from the outside and the inside. The men were motionless, weeping, and the women bade their farewells. Feelings are so important, and being able to elicit them from people, being able to get to what they feel underneath, that's our job. That's our job as therapists. Sometimes we know what we're doing, sometimes we don't know what we're doing, but that's our job. Our job is to help a person feel things that they may be reluctant to feel at other times. That's my job. Woman came in to see me today. She was telling me she was feeling real nervous, nervous about her job, nervous about what she would do during the day. And I said, it sounds like you're in middle plots. And she said, what is middle plots? And I said, that's in the middle between two real feelings. I said, the middle place. And I said, so tell me something that would evoke a tear in you. She said, my mother's recent death. I said, so cry. And she let her, so she said, I can't, and I gave her a suggestion on how to do it, and she started to weep. And what happened is all of the tension released. What she was really doing was still mourning her mother. My job was to take her away from the ordinary stuff of today, as so many people get caught in, and to take her underneath it. That's my job. So this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. There is such a bunch to learn about this. There is so much. It's not, I mean, some people can casually do therapy or do counseling just by being good, wise friends. I have some people who work here who could be just a good buddy, a good pal, and they could help you out. But I've studied this for many, many years, and I've been around here a long time. Now, I want to read you something that's very interesting. So people come to me as often as being, you know, the wise man. And I may be wise, but I'm not so wise. But this is a poem by R.D. Lang. R.D. Lang was a psychologist. And it's a poem about what happens, what he perceives people do when they come to him. And here is the poem, and I hope you don't get confused because it's a little confusing, but let's try to do it. A person says, there is something I don't know that I'm supposed to know. I don't know what it is I don't know, and yet am supposed to know. And I feel I look stupid if I seem both not to know and not to know what it is I don't know. Does that make sense? Therefore, I pretend I know it. This is nerve-wracking. Since I don't know what I must pretend to know, therefore I pretend to know everything. I feel you know what I'm supposed to know, but you can't tell me what it is because you don't know that I don't know what it is. You may know what I don't know, but not that I don't know it. and I can't tell you. So the only thing we could do is you're going to have to tell me everything. That's a poem by R.D. Lang. All right, I'm still with you guys. I'm still with you. All right, so today, they say, is a fun drive day. I was listening to the other programs here, and nobody seems to be really pitching for money, but I do. I do when I get on the air. I plan these programs around that, trying to raise money from people in any way I can for Pacifica Radio, you know. But Pacifica Radio, I want to tell you about Pacifica. I am upset with Pacifica. I don't like Pacifica Radio. I am fed up with them. I am sick of them. Hey, what a thing. I can't, you know, think about Pacifica Radio and think about WBAI. I can't be more, you can't be more left-wing than Pacifica Radio. The word is pacify. But here is a station who for years since its onset has mismanaged its money, mismanaged its programming, mismanaged so much stuff that here they are dire again, saying to you in effect, listen, we're on our last foot. We're 7 weeks in and we can't really get off the air until we ask you for more money. That's shameful. It's shameful. And then we're going to get people on the air like who are professional pitchers, and they'll get you to raise something, or they're going to sell you some products, you know, a little over cost, or then we may not even deliver the products that we offer, which has happened so many times. And I can't stand being associated with something that poor. But I am. And I am for another reason, for a commitment which I'll talk about. But Pacifica Radio, I tell you, just think about how it formed. At first, it was a rebellion. At first, there was the war in Vietnam, and a group of people stood up and said, we protest. And we protest. And when a group stood up and said, we protest, they had an enemy, a common enemy, which was the people with the rifles and the guns. And they all stood together, and they linked arms, and they had this common enemy. Now, who joined together? I mean, everybody joined in. The Black Panthers joined in. You know, every rebellion you could imagine. Every rebellious group you could imagine. You know, the women's activists joined in. The gay rights people joined in. They all stood up and they said, we don't want war. And they fought against the war and against the people that represented the war. And they won. They won, or at least they were part of the solution. And then the war disappears. Now, what do you think happens when the war goes away? These factions are still strong factions who are used to fighting. So now they're saying, well, what are we going to fight? Well, I think I'll fight the other faction here. Maybe I'll take over WBAI. And over again, the factions at WBAI worked against each other. And they figured, how are we going to do this? How are we going to make it work? How are we going to get this to happen? And through all kinds of sneaky things and board elections, you know, they'd elect people on the board who favored them or stuff like that. It was the same as every other corporation that you could imagine. It just looked better because it was WBAI. Now, throughout this, mind you, there are a couple of jewels running through it. The biggest one I could think of is Amy Goodman. You have Amy Goodman and Democracy Now! Running through this entire programming with all the stuff that she and I are seeing that make us sick, with program director being brought in, and they would have a new station head at BAI. There was Bernard, there was Utrice, you know, then there was Bob Henley, and there were all kinds of people. And every time somebody came in and somebody else disagreed with them, they were fired, they were kicked out. Some of them deserve to be kicked out. They're still waiting in the wings, waiting for their moment to come back. This is Armand DeMille voicing his disappointment and his anger towards WBAI and the way they've conducted themselves. They have been shameful, and they don't know what to do. So we got this one person who's the office manager here, the station manager here at BAI. He's running right and left. There's almost no crew left. they have only like five or six people left, all working together. You know, Andrea is kind of working with Bertol, and there's, you know, they're trying to do it. They're trying the very best. But they have voices that they listen to also. But they're trying, and they work right to the end. And, of course, Michael G. Haskins. Now, they do, but, you know, they're really, their hands are tied. Not only are their hands tied, they may be inadequate at what they do. Because whatever they're doing, it isn't working. So here I stand with you guys, and I stand with you, and I say, here's the station, and you hear me talking about WBAI and how I love it. No, I don't love the station. What I love is what we do. And the fact that there is this vehicle on WBAI that allows people like Amy Goodman, like The Positive Mind, like other beautiful parts of BAI to be broadcast, that will be quieted eventually because of the mismanagement, misappropriations, and fights of WBAI. Well, what else would you expect? It's a group of hippies who are trying to run a business. And when a group of hippies are trying to run a business, they don't know how to run businesses. None of them have been successful business managers. There is no person who's been really successful in business who said, oh, I'm going to give up my $200,000 a year now and go work on WBAI's board. Nobody's done that. No, what we've had is people who don't do that, people who are not successful in the world. And they've come up and they said, well, maybe I'll be a success by being successful at WBAI, but they don't have the skill. So it bothers me. It bothers me that over and over again, there is this call out for money because somehow it was mismanaged. I don't know what they could do now. Certainly, we are in the ditch. Certainly, there's little we could do. But I could say to you guys, I love what happens on WBAI. But WBAI itself and Pacifica Radio itself, I don't like. Now, there's a rule at Pacifica Radio which says you are not allowed to badmouth the station. I'm not badmouthing the station. I just don't like it. And if they're going to take me off the air for that very reason, please do so, please. And it means, finally, it's a place I don't belong. But it is a place that I feel I belong because I believe that I'm part of the cure. I think that I have been, throughout the years, throughout the 35 years that I've been here, the one element that has been constant. In all of the years, every programmer that you know of who's on WBAI has been off the air for one reason or another. I have not. Why have they not taken me off the air? Because they consider me harmless. Number one, they consider me potent. Number two, and because they consider me a decent part of the station, which I think I am. So I say to all of you, when I come and I ask you, help support the station, I'm saying we're in a fix. We're begging because we made a mess ourselves. It is not the raising the rent that got us. It's not the storm that got us. Other people survived the storm. Other people survived the rent hikes. No, it's us that got us. And we're all a part of it. So I say to you, what we got to do is, I'm asking you once again, all right, you're going to throw some support my way? You throw some support for me, for WBAI, and for the Positive Mind, because the Positive Mind in its 1,000 different broadcasts is now around the world to so many people who have been able to get access to it. Amy Goodman is around the world. Now, Amy learned something many years ago. She said, that place is a mess. She didn't say it out loud, but this is what she felt. So she built her own entity. DemocracyNow.org is a separate organization. They took over a firehouse. They have the separate organization. They broadcast all over the world, and they do TV. And she does terrific work. Terrific work. I have always had something else that I have doing. I run a clinic. I run a mental health clinic. I'm a very successful therapist. As you hear, I've been a workshop leader and all of that stuff. So I have something outside of the station. I don't need to do this. And the number of us who have it, Gary Null has his stuff going. Number of us do not need to be on the air to keep our businesses, ourselves alive. However we choose to be here. I choose to be here because there is something here that is a vital, a vital force, an artery that runs through this society that I think myself and you want to be a part of. So what are we doing? I believe the more you learn about people, the more you could study how to deal with people, I think the better off you are. And I think one of the ways to do that is I have this course of training that I offered about a month ago. I did a group of tapes of programs called the Psychology for Therapists. And in this, I talked about the nature of feelings, learning about feelings, knowledge, and behavior. And what it was a training session source that I did with one of my people here, one of my trainees. And I taught her over and over again, these are the different things you have to listen to and pay attention to. Now, the beauty of this training is that you could use it in day-to-day life. I used to teach at one of the universities, and I would be going in there, and every time I would do my course on psychology, people could walk out using that stuff in day-to-day life. This series does that for you. And we've offered this series before, and I'm going to offer it one more time, because when they said to me, we're still doing fundraising, I said, oh, my God almighty. Because I don't like it. I'm not happy with it. I'm hope we're back on the air next week, two times a week, WBAI. Because in their wisdom, that's what they figured they could make happen. So I hope we're back with you. I hope the station stays alive. I can't stand the station not staying alive. So we offer things. We offer these premiums. And do you know what I do when we can't match the premium? When we can't bring up any money from you guys? I put the money in myself. I put it in myself. I make the donations myself. So every time that they get donations, they get some little thing from Armand DeMille that kind of adds up to kind of pull things together. Because I support us. So here we are on the last day of Armand DeMille doing any fundraising. And I would like you to call right now. And here we got our people at our office standing by. And here's what we're offering you. One of the things we're offering you, you want to have one of those workshops where I put you under a mattress? Well, you could get a one-time consultation with me. It's not much of a consultation. It's a half hour. Do those people know we're going to be calling today instead of yesterday? You know, that we should have done. We have a couple of people who have actually had this experience, and they could tell you about it. Why don't you get somebody on the line? So the number here is 212-757-4488. That's 212-757-4488. For $125, you could get these 10 programs, which I guarantee you are of great value. You get them to you on a flash drive. We'll send it to you as a flashlight or a digital download. And once you get it as a digital download, you'll be able to listen to it and actually give a class to yourself, or you could break it up into small flash drives. You could send it around to your friends. You could do whatever you want with it. It's fabulous stuff. It's good education. It's great. So 212-757-4488. If you haven't gotten this flash drive, here's a great opportunity to do it. Or a digital download. Either way, we'll do it. For a different thing, we're offering a consultation for $200 WBAI, $200 donation to the station. I will meet with you personally. I will meet with you alone, you and me, 212-757-4488. That's 212-757-4488. 212-757-4488. Go to your phones right now, my friends. And I'd like to hear your responses as well. So I'd like to hear your responses to what we're doing. If you want to call in with your responses, you could tell the person who answers the phone that you would like to talk to us as well. 212-757-4488. Make your calls right now, my friends. And we'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes.
A little rain. 212-757-4488. 212-757-4488 is the line here to donate to the Positive Mind.
En mi vida siempre estuve, ya tú ves, solo en amanecer y las noches también, como una vez hoy en cualquier lugar.
We are taking your calls here at 212-757-4488 is our donation line to make a donation for this Psychology for Therapists flash drive with 12 programs and the $200 donation for that consultation with Armand DeMille. Oh, oh.
Si nunca mirar atrás. Mucha gente he conocido sin parar.
You know, I was down at the Puerto Rican Day Parade on Sunday. I went there with Kevin O'Donoghue, one of the therapists here, and the two of us were kind of hanging out. It was tame. It was so tame. It used to be the wildest party in town. I don't know what happened to you guys. ¿Qué pasa? It was so tame. It was like maybe because they weren't drinking alcohol, maybe because the police had it so organized. Everybody was looking around for the party to start, you know, but I guess we tamed down. And it's a certain heart that's very important. Well, we need you of the Latin persuasion, no matter what it is. We need your help here to keep what I'm doing going. 212-757-4488. That's 212-757-4488.
Yo soy Ángela Rivas y deseo hacer una donación a WBAI para ayudar el programa The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille. Este programa ayuda a personas alrededor del mundo. Yo sé que este programa se escucha en mi pueblo natal, en Moca, en la República Dominicana. Por favor, llame al 212-757-4488 y haga una donación. 212-757-4488, demuestre su amor.
Angela Rivas. Amazing. Hey, listen, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I've been away for 3 weeks. Let me tell you why I've been away for 3 weeks. I've been away for 3 weeks because I wasn't feeling well, you know. So for a number of days, I kept feeling like something was going wrong. I said, you know, my body feels weak. Something feels wrong. I don't know what's wrong. So I'd go visit a doctor. I'd go in to see a naturopath for a while. And that didn't help. He said, oh, yeah, you've got a cold, or I think you've got this bug that's going around. I saw 9 physicians of both persuasions. Not one of them detected anything particularly wrong. They did blood tests, and they did all kinds of other tests. No, you look fine, you look fine. Everything, okay. But it didn't feel right to me. I got worse every day, and every day I got weaker. Now, I don't know if you know what that feels like, but weaker in such a profound way that I believed I was dying. I said, you know, this must be what it's like to really leave the park. So I brought myself to a hospital, and they took me into the hospital. Within 15 minutes, they said, you've got a double pneumonia, and it's hidden, and you need treatment immediately. And had you not gotten in here, it was going to be really dangerous. On top of that, there was a heart condition that I had been living with that they said that has to be corrected too. So the last 3 weeks of my life were spent under this kind of medical thing, which they did very well. They did very, very well. But a number of things came out of it that were very important to me. You see, part of what being a therapist is learning how to see through the other person's eyes. You have to kind of look at what it's like to be them. I teach that to my therapists all the time. What's it like to be this person? What does it feel like to be in their shoes? What does it feel like to be so anxious, to be so scared, to be so nervous? Because therapists very quickly, and other people, are very quick to judge folks for the way they are. But when you ask them, could you walk through their shoes? Can you be through there? Could you be like them? That's a different story. Well, this brings me to the hospital. So in the hospital, they gave me surgery, and because of the nature of the surgery, they had to give me full anesthesia. And they gave me a full anesthesia, and something happened to me. I flipped into a form of psychosis that is rarely known, but happens with anesthesia. Now, this is very interesting. So while I was under the anesthesia, I actually imagined that they wanted to kill me. I imagined it as they were taking me down to the ICU. I saw my family and my friends standing around, and I said, watch out, they're trying to kill me. They're trying to hurt me. Now, I've never thought anybody was trying to kill me in my life. I'm a big bear. You know, nobody wants to hurt me. But during those moments, I had ideas about plots, schemes, about why they were trying to get rid of me, why they had a mask on my face, which was an oxygen mask, because they didn't want me to say anything, because I was going to expose the fact that they really wanted me dead because they made a mistake and they were afraid of getting sued and they would rather I would be dead. That's what my mind went through for a number of hours. And here I am thinking about this, and I've got people around me who love me and care for me. And they're saying, and I'm trying to tell them, and they believe me because they know I am never going to lie about this stuff. They're believing me, and they're saying, we're going to keep records, we're going to watch everything, we're going to make sure that you get the best. But I had this fear running through me. I had this caution running through me. And then somewhere in the middle of it, somewhere when I'm convinced that the person giving me water has poisoned it, I said to myself, could this be what it's like to be paranoid? And somehow my brain clicked over. I didn't get out of it right away, but I realized that this was what it was like to be on the inside of paranoid schizophrenia. This is what it feels like. It was horrendous. My God, what a horrible feeling. It was so, it wasn't even scared. It was beyond scared. It was beyond scared to apprehension, to fear, to making sure every minute, every door, every aspect. Nobody could be trusted, none of your friends. When you meet people who are paranoid, that's what they feel. Nobody could be trusted. I even thought that there were little signs around that were meant to tell people to get rid of me. You know, that's pretty nutsy. Now, we all get nutsy in our own way. Falling in love is a form of nutsiness. Did you ever fall in love and you become completely irrational? And you can't believe it. You're willing to quit your job. You're willing to you do that for love. We don't consider that paranoia. But it is a crazy form. When people fall in love and they dedicate themselves and they give up other things. But that's not one of those bad, bad feelings. The bad feelings are what happen when you break up. When you break up, suddenly you drop into an abyss, and the abyss you feel is not a normal abyss. It goes as big as the fantasy was when you got together, and it's a crazy feeling. You feel depressed. You want to kill yourself. You want to leave. You don't want to be a part of it. Can't imagine yourself doing. So what I learned from the hospital experience was that I learned what it's like to be inside the body. To be inside somebody who was paranoid. And I've talked to paranoid people all my life. I thought I knew what it was like. No, I didn't know what it was like. Now I know what it's like. And for that experience, I was invaluable. Another experience happened to me in the hospital that I thought was very cute. When I was in the ICU, I'm there, and this is the intensive care unit. I've got my friends around me, you know, and they're wheeling me into the ICU. And they're putting me on the cardiac care unit. And I'm in there, and a woman and a nurse comes in and out, and she's a nice smiling nurse, and she says, do you remember me? Do you see my name? And her name was Ruth Ayure. And I said, I recognize your name. She said, well, that's the same as my mother's name. She said, you see, 45 years ago, you saved my life. I said, what? She said, yeah, you gave my mother treatment 45 years ago. And that made all the difference in the world. And I said, well, okay, good enough. Because that's what I do. I save lives sometimes. You know, it's part of my job. It's like if you had a job as a nurse or as a doctor. Every now and then you save a life. But then she said to me, no, you went so far out of it. You took care of me. You took care of my mother. She said, but here's what I'm going to tell you, Armand. For as long as you're in this hospital, I'm going to watch you every minute. I'm going to come in my spare time. I'm going to take care of you the way you took care of us. Boy, was I graced. That was great. That was great, Ruth. Thank you so much. Maybe I'll have her on the air. Well, her mother turns out to be this huge success. Becomes a PhD and is the head of one of the major institutions. And so I called up her mother. And her mother just cried and said, Armand, is that really you? And then we got together. She came to the hospital to visit and we just cried together. Such a beautiful thing. Nice part about this. But listen, be a part of it yourself. Let's keep it going for the other people who may not be able to know of our very existence. I want to be able to make another program that Tom Gerby can put on our, he's our webmaster, can put on our website and have distributed to you people, and you, not only you, but the people in the Philippines who listen, the people in France who have their Positive Mind Club. I want to get it around. 212-757-4488. That's 212-757-4488. You make a call right now for a $200 donation. Come to meet with me, I dare you. I dare you. It's not going to be mediocre. It's not going to be minor stuff. Yes, I'm going to be loving. Yes, I'm going to be caring. Yes, I'll be the most accepting guy you ever met in your life because I have no judgments about anything. But I'm also going to help you look at things that you may not be able to see from an angle that you may not be able to see it. And maybe that'll make all the difference for you. 212-757-4488 for a $125 donation. You can get an education that's just unbelievable. Unbelievable education. It's 12 different programs that were all about learning about the human mind. Beautiful stuff. Beautiful stuff. 212-757-4488. $125 donation gets you the flash drive or digital download. Let me turn you over to my unique cousin, Julian Joiello.
Hello there. This is Julian Joiello, and we're going to keep going. I want to explain this flash drive to you guys. Psychology for Therapists in 12 parts. And we've got starting off with the nature of feeling. So Armand, in this series, which is a $125 donation, you'll get this flash drive, or you can get it in a digital download, which I'll send an email to you today, right after your donation, where you can download all of these programs, have them on your computer, and learn about yourself. So Psychology for Therapists series on a flash drive or digital download is a $125 donation, and this goes to supporting the positive mind, supporting us here, and making sure that this program, which has been going for 35 years and counting, continues onward and upward. And a $200 donation for that meeting with Armand here. So, Psychology for Therapists starts with part one, the nature of feelings, dealing with the basics of understanding feelings and emotions. part two is all about taking those feelings and integrating them with your knowledge and your behavior. Then part three, exploring your dependency, which we're actually going to likely play up a part of for you a little later. Part four, stages of growth and understanding the resistance to growth, how to overcome our natural resistance to change. Part five, discerning pathology. This is really helpful for therapists, but for people that want to understand how it works, how to distinguish between normal behavior and not normal behavior. How valuable is that? And that's in part five. And this continues on for 12 parts, all on this flash drive or digital download for a $125 donation. 212-757-4488 is our number. 212-757-4488. We've got people waiting. And if the line is busy because we're getting a lot of calls, please keep calling. 212-757-4488 is that number. Thank you. 212-757-4488. 757-4488.
Standing in the rain, and I can feel a cold chill creeping up my back. And if it keeps on pouring down, I'll be here till my daddy's back. Yes, I will. Stumbling through the city, stopping everyone I see. You got me going crazy. Strangers look like you to me. Yes, they do now, Lord, but if it takes me all night long, I gotta keep walking till my back ain't got no bone. No bone. Dummies in the showcase, they all seem to come alive. Yes, they do. And it looks like they all laugh and saying, hey, why don't you go somewhere and hide? Stumbling through the city, hey, stopping everyone I see. Lord, you got me going crazy. My color, strangers looking like you to me. Yes, they do. Hey, but if it takes me all night long, I gotta keep stepping till my back ain't got no bone. Oh, no bone. I'd find my baby. I got to find my baby. Oh, my Lord, I gotta keep on walking till I find my baby.
I'm talking about my knee bone.
So one of the questions, let's talk about thinking style. This is kind of important, Lisa. If you think about everybody, everyone could be broken into one of four categories, and everybody likes categories. How you approach the material world, that's very important. How do you deal with the physical world? How do you deal with machines and with toys and with things like that? And then how do you deal with the non-material world? And the non-material world is thoughts, feelings, imagination, the non-material world. So we have the material world and the non-material world. Now, why is that important? Because believe it or not, almost everyone fits into a certain category around these issues. Let's start with the material world. How do you approach the material world? Do you line up the ducks and say there is a sequence to the world? Step A, follow step B, follow step C. If you see a car coming down the road, that means that it must be a green light, and that means that the traffic is flowing smoothly, and that means it goes at a certain pace, and there's a sequence to life. A sequence. Each 1 year follows the next. You get a little older, you get a little older. The sequencing is of concrete elements. So if you're a bookkeeper, for example, that's perfect. Bookkeepers are perfect people who put the sequence in order, right? They numerically assign things and they could line up the ducks. Some people are so intent on putting the world in order that they just focus on getting everything in order all the time. If you mess up their desk, they say, what's this doing here? What's this there? Right? Okay. This is called concrete sequential thinking. Concrete sequential means you take the concrete world and you put it in sequence. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay. So we have the concrete world in sequence. Yes. Right. That's a CS. Concrete sequential. Now, how else could you approach the world? Well, let's say you're a creative type. You look at the concrete world, and you say, well, the concrete world could be this way now, but it could change in 5 minutes. And so you could see it randomly. You take a look at the concrete world, and you say it's not necessarily in order. So a very creative mind, like the guy who created Facebook or the guy who created Steve Jobs, these are not concrete sequentials because they didn't just take what is and align it. They went outside the box and they created beyond what was known. So being able to create beyond the concrete sequential, it's called a concrete random. So now we have two ways of approaching the concrete world. Either you do it sequentially or you do it randomly. The world tends to admire the sequences, the sequencers. The world says all you have to do is go to school, study this course, do this thing, step one, step two, step three, step four. That's what the world teaches. They are not used to the fact that, you know, a person is random. They don't like it, thinking outside the box. They don't really like creative people. The world is built for order, and it says put things in order. However, without the concrete random, the world would get stymied. You need the concrete random. Albert Einstein was a concrete random. He was able to... Actually, there's a joke about Albert Einstein. Albert Einstein was known for his love of children as well, but one day he was laying down a cement walk outside his house. And the children came along, and they wanted to jump in and write their names in the cement walk, and he shooed them away with a loud voice, and his wife comes out and says, Albert, how could you be so rough on those children? And he said, I like children in the abstract, but not in the concrete. I don't think that really happened. So concrete random means I take whatever is material and I could flip it any way you want. So the real creative people, the real creative thinkers, that's what they're doing, right? Meanwhile, you, without the people to put it in sequence, you have no success. So I can think of 100 different people who I've met in my life who are sequential thinkers. They could, concrete random thinkers. They have ideas after ideas after ideas. They come up with creative ideas, but unless you could put it in order, you cannot succeed. Unless you have concrete sequential, you can't succeed. So the perfect partners are a concrete random with a concrete sequential. You think of the ideas, I'll line it up for you. Okay? Of course, what happens is a concrete random says to the concrete sequential, you're being too tight, you have to loosen up. And the concrete sequential is saying, no, you have to tighten up a little bit. So there's an argument that usually ensues between the two, and it really is not necessary because the two of them do collaborate and work with each other. Now, I will say that we're going to talk about four characteristics, and every one of us as people have at least all four of these to different degrees or others. Sometimes you're weighted far more in one than another. So ideally, you would have all four qualities we've talked about two so far at about 25% each. When you're highly weighted in the concrete sequential, meaning around a 35%, a 45%, a 50%, then that means you're probably obsessive compulsive. It probably means you can't get away from order. When you're heavily weighted in the concrete random, it means you can't hold a job, because you can't go back to work day after day and keep doing that. So we now have how people deal with the material world. The next issue we want to understand is how people deal with the non-material world. In the non-material world, that's the world of philosophy, psychology, religion, astrology, you know, all of these things that you can't weigh. You can't bite, right? How do you see it? Well, some people take the non-material world and they decide to line it up. This is very true of astrology. Astrology says, well, the reason that this exists is because this exists. Because your moon was in your Taurus, you had this conjunction with Venus, and therefore you were feeling bad that day. See? It's a sequence. You're showing a sequence, I believe. Or Freudians. Because when you were a little child, you had this sexual feelings towards your parakeet, and that wound up inhibiting you later in life, so on and so forth. Sequence. Always sequence. There's a belief that the emotional reactions are a sequence, that they're created by something, and then they're sequenced into something else. And so all history professors, almost every professor you ever meet in a school is an abstract sequential thinker. They take the abstract world and they put it in sequence, otherwise they couldn't teach it. Philosophy teaches abstract sequentials. We're going to have to go back to the qualities of the abstract sequentials in a couple of minutes. Let's go back with the last one of the abstract world, and there are the abstract randoms. Now, the abstract random says emotions, thoughts, feelings, they all flow into each other, and there is no sequence. So an abstract sequential would be a flower child. They would be, you know, well, it's just flowing down the stream, just go with the flow. There is no direction. If you were very highly abstract random, I mean, if you were one of those go with the flow people, you would have a difficulty in life because everybody's going to be looking for you to be dependable about something. But you see the world is flowing, so you don't respect time, you don't respect anything. You're just basically saying everything moves. So if you have a very high abstract sequential, you're probably a very nervous person. You're probably a person who gets easily touched by things. You probably are very sensitive. You probably find emotions creeping up out of nowhere. That's abstract sequential. Abstract random, I'm sorry. That's the randomness. The sequential understands all the emotions. They say, this is caused by this, this is caused by this, this is caused by this. There is nothing more infuriating than being with somebody who's an abstract sequential when you have an emotion. Because they're always telling you where it comes from. And they're giving you, they're lining it up. And the thing that you want when you feel deeply emotional is you don't want somebody to explain where it comes from. You want somebody to hold you and say, I'm so sorry you feel that way. But what most people do is they go to someone who is dispassionate, who then lines it up. So now you have to understand, each of you, if you're an abstract sequential, an abstract random. Does that make sense now, which of these two we're talking about?
Yes.
The abstract world, sequential or random, concrete world, sequential or random. Let's do it again. Concrete sequential. That's a person who sees the world, the concrete world, the material world, and lines it up. Concrete random. And that's part of what you learn. What we just played for you is a part of the clip. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind here on WBAI, the miserable WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests. And it is 2 o'clock here in the middle of the dial. So as I've said to you, I've been airing some of my frustrations, and these are frustrations that you could hear anybody working at the station would voice to each other. They're exacerbated. They're exhausted. I could tell you there are people like Tony and Reggie and Michael. You can't believe how much these guys work. And what are they working for? I spoke to Michael the other day, who I consider to be a dear friend. He said to me, you know, Armand, I believe in this station. I believe in it, and that's why I'm here, my friends. I believe in it. I believe in it. You know, you've got to be part of something. I can't stand the way they run it. I can't stand somebody, one hand doesn't know the way the other hand is going, so I can't guarantee you anything. I can guarantee you 2 things. If you ever hear a premium that's offered through me, you'll get it within a week. That's one. I could offer you that you're going to hear only honesty on this side of the mic. Actually, most WBAI is honest broadcasting. I could promise you that when you listen to somebody like Amy Goodman, you're going to be getting a jewel of a gift over and over again. And we can't afford to let this piece of radio disappear. So I don't care who it's owned by. You know, WBAI can't handle it because they don't know what to do with each other, because they're going to have some fight between one manager and another manager because somebody wants them to raise somebody and fire another person. It's just like corporate media. It's no different. But with all that they do, and you hear about it, in all the news. You know, they have fired Summer Reese. They fired this. They fired that. Most of it is politics. But what they have underneath it all is there is the only station that is allowed to let you hear the absolute truth. Now, you could be like the other places. You know, the WBAI could have been, or Pacifica could have been, just like most of the regular stations, and they could have taken on advertising. They could have taken on advertising only for good things. You know, like Whole Foods now advertises on WBAI, and you know, good things. Things that, you know, organic farms through WBAI. We could have taken on advertisers, and those advertisers would have made it easy for us. That's one smart thing they could have done. They could have done it even now. They could say, okay, we can't survive without advertisers. Let's be selective about who we have advertise. You know, we'll only have certain people and not other people. I think that's the way it always starts. And then I remember once I got a job working for some radio station, and they wanted me to advertise cat food. And I said, all right, they're going to say cat food was going to be our sponsor. And I said, okay, I go along with that. Then they wanted me to read the ad, and I had to talk about how delicious cat food was for cats. And I just couldn't do it. I threw it down, and I said, I quit. I can't do this. I can't do it. But BAI here, I could offer you a lot of things that are positive, you know, and a lot of interesting information. And just the man we were listening to a moment ago on Gary Nels, fabulous stuff that we're listening to. We hear. You can hear stuff through WBAI that you can't hear anywhere else in the world. So what do? Lousy station management. Horrendous station management. Clearly, you know, 45 years and they're still collapsing. Why so? You want to blame the economy? You want to blame the right wing? You want to blame somebody else? No, you got to take account for it. It's all you guys fighting amongst yourselves. All right? Continue to do it because that's your nature. So you continue to do it. So we continue to struggle because that's what we always do. All right? So then we'll continue to struggle. But in the meantime, we could have gone the other way, the way of some of the public programmers, and we could have had advertisers that were sponsors. You know, like you hear public radio being sponsored by, not advertised, by Esso. You know, by Esso or by Ford or something like that. And so, you know, it's another way of advertising. But not BAI. It just said none of that. And it still says none of that. And maybe it would be wiser if they took on some of that stuff. But boy, you gotta love them for their dedication, for their conviction. 212-757-4488. If you make a donation to WBAI right now, you make a donation maybe for keeping the positive mind on the air, maybe for thanking them for all the stuff you've ever gotten from them. 212-757-4488. If you get we have a flash drive that's going to be such an education. We're going to play more parts of that for you in a minute. And if not that, we have other things that we're going to bring you as well. However, we did get a call from Gladys. Hey, Gladys, you called, and while you were on the phone, I said, can I call you right back? But I think I got the wrong number. Can you call us back? Let me give you the number. What number is that? No, the other. Yes. Call us back at this number, Gladys, 212-957-2729. 212-957-2729. And any of you who have had made a donation and gotten this flash drive and would like to call us and say, you know, this is a good thing. Now, if you're going to call us to complain about the station, not now because we need the time. You could always write me an email about it, but 212-957-2729 if you're Gladys Roman and you want to give us a call back. Other than that, it's 212-757-4488. Let's talk about one of the great developments in our life. Becoming and becoming just like our parents. God. Do you ever look at your parents, one of your parents when you're a kid and say, oh, I'm never going to be like that? See, when we're born, we're exposed to a very confusing world. We're a blank backboard filled with certain genetic messages. The primary message is to survive, you have to keep alive. Certain things are automatic, like breathing and suckling a nipple for sustenance. But the first thinking goes to how to survive physically, how to stay alive, and how to stay alive better. So before we are really conscious, we begin the development of our surviving self, the part that will be with us through the rest of our life, making automatic decisions about things, avoiding danger, getting food, finding shelter, etc. This self-protector self, the surviving self, I call the engineer. I call him or her the engineer because that's what the job is, to keep the engine, the body, going. It cares about the body mainly. The engineer has one basic rule in life that it lives by. What was, or what once was, is and will always be. Now, it's a very important rule of the engineer. It only lives on its past experience. It cannot extrapolate into the future. It can't say in the future this will happen. In other words, whatever happened once will happen again and will probably always happen. So, for example, once you put your hand in a flame and you got burned, the engineer will get to you to be shy of flames. And if you put out an asbestos glove and you know that, knowing that you can't get burned, you'll feel the engineer try to pull your hand back. Even though you have an asbestos block on your hand, you have an asbestos glove on, you'll put your hand over the fire, but you'll hear an apprehension. You'll feel an apprehension because the engineer's still at work. You say, I can't get burned, and you put your hand over it, and you can still feel yourself pulling back. You'll feel the engineer try to pull you back, even if you know absolutely for certain that you can't get burned. But once you have the experience of not getting burned, you'll feel less of the engineer's reflex in your musculature when you try again. So that's it. Very basic learning theory. We learn from experience. The only wrinkle I propose is that the engineer runs most of the show, no matter how smart we are. It is working all the time. No matter how smart we think we are, it's in charge. The second rule for the engineer is that it must stay invisible, non-visible, because it knows that if you could see him or her, and if it has a sex, you would override him or her or it or them. You'd override them. If you saw them, if they said to you, no, don't do that, it's no good for you, you'd say, yes, I'm going to do it. So let's get back to the engineer, the auto self-protective master or madam of the body. The engineer learns primarily from experience, but gets some ideas from observing others. It asks one big and very intelligent question. If the more power I have, the better chance I have of surviving. So let me look around and see, where do I get more power? And then it asks, well, who's got the power? Maybe I could get it from them. Of course, it looks at the two biggest people around and determines our parents and asks which of these have the most power, which one is running the show, and how do they do it? So the engineer in every child looks at our parents and picks from our parents the one who has the most power, chooses the one who has the most power, and decides in some way to deal with it. So the child's engineer observes his or her parents and records information. So let's look at a dysfunctional, typical family picture. Dad goes to work every day. Mom stays at home tending the house and the children. Mom feeds, protects, soothes, heals, seems to be the one with all the power. But when Daddy gets home, she stops everything. She drops what she's doing. She feeds him and tells us not to get in his way. She's afraid of him. So somewhere the engineer records, Dad's got the real power, not Mom. And the child notices and studies what it does that Dad does that gives him all the power. And he records that information in the recess of his mind. For now, I'll follow Mommy, but when I get bigger, I'm going to be like Daddy. So I'll keep Mommy happy since she's the one who feeds me, but one day, I'm going to have the power of my father. So if your father was an abuser, you're likely to become an abuser. If he was a liar, you're likely to become a liar. If he was scatterbrained, you're likely to be scatterbrained because the engineer is saying that's where the power was. To go one step further in this example of this particular type of family dynamic, the child starts in early life to practice its observed daddy skills. It does it when Mommy's not looking, so it tries being commanding with its sibling. Like if you're an older child, you start acting like your father with the other children. You start commanding them. You learn how to control. You experiment with what control is like. You go to school and you control the other kids. You could easily become a bully. So I guess you get the picture. It's the behavior of the source of power is what we record and reproduce later. Whoever has got the control has got the most power, and that's clearly the way to be. You know, we've learned something about people who are abducted. And they're abducted and they get caught on by prisoners. After a while, they start sympathizing with the abductors. That's part of this. That's part of in some way, identifying with the source of power. Now, there are many configurations. What if Daddy comes home from work and Mommy ignores him? It seems that mommy has all the power. But what if daddy comes home and mommy ignores him, but daddy says that he's sick and mommy gets scared and doesn't ignore him but takes care of him instead? Now it's a sick daddy that has all the power. So you say, I'll be a sick daddy when I grow up. Let's say you have a mommy who's got all the power and she's sick all the time. You grow up and you say, I'm going to become a sick mommy. And many of you have decided to be sick in your adult life. This is Armand DeMille with you at the Bottom of the Mind, talking about some heavy stuff and interesting stuff, stuff that helps you learn about yourself. In this case, we're talking about why we become and don't become like our fathers and mothers. Or if daddy comes home and mommy drops everything to serve him, but then mommy gets sick and daddy serves her, then it's sick mommy. I'll be sick mommy when I grow up, and maybe aloof, secretive daddy has all the power, or maybe screaming, hysterical mommy has all the power. So you see, sexes don't naturally align. Women children can become like their daddies, men children can become like their mothers. Society does not have some influence on your choice, or does actually, and their public demeanor may be normal and sweet, but in relationships and in the privacy of child-rearing, all those programs unfold. And you could be very nice and have a sweet face to everybody out there, but you could be a monster at home. Because if the person you loved looked at you when you were being at your worst, and they said to you, you're just like your father, it would crucify you, it would kill you, it would cut through the invisibility of the engineer, and you would almost become violent. But that's why those words hurt you so much. How are you? Are you like your parents? Think about it. Are you like your mother or your father? What would you say to yourself? Which one are you more like? You're probably going to say both. But if you boil it down, you're going to say my mother or my father, and you're going to find yourself answering one or the other. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. We're talking about some very interesting stuff, which I will get back to in just a couple of minutes. But Julian is going to tell you about what we're doing here today.
And what we're doing here today is this two-hour special where we're asking for donations from the audience here for WBAI and the Positive Mind, because we want this programming and all the other great programming here on WBAI to continue forward. 212-757-4488 is our number. Again, 212-757-4488. So a $200 donation or more will get you this meeting with Armand, and you get to come in here and meet with him and build a mattress fort or listen to music together or talk about your family, anything you want. You've got that time. 212-757-4488. And that special, unique experience is absolutely one of a kind. And along with that, you've got this Psychology for Therapists flash drive or digital download coming to you. Again, also Gladys Roman, if you are out there, call us. We'd love to fulfill that for you. 212-757-4488. Psychology for Therapists 12-part flash drive is this wonderful, interesting thing that we built for you. We got this 12-part series which teaches you how to understand people and understand yourself and understand everything better. That's what that's going to do for you. And we've been showing you little parts of it, but we want you to hear the whole thing. So 212-757-4488 is that number. 212-757-4488. Call now, 212-757-4488.
On behalf of all the people who assembled here, I would merely like to mention,
if I may,
that our unanimous attitude is one of lasting gratitude for what our friend has done for us today. And therefore, I would simply like to say,
thank you very much. Thank you very much. That's the nicest thing that anyone's ever done for me. I may sound humble Dutch, but my delight is such, I feel as if I'm losing what's been won for me. And if I had a flag, I'd hang me flag out to add a sort of final victory touch. But since I left me flag at home, I simply have to say thank you very, very, very much.
Thank you very, very, very much.
They all love me, and I didn't know it. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. That's the nicest thing that anyone's ever done for me. It sounds a bit bizarre, but things the way they are, I feel as if another life's begun for me.
And if I had a cannon, I would fire it to add a sort of celebration touch. But since I let me cannon alone, I simply have to say
thank you very, very, very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. That's the nicest thing that anyone's ever done for us.
Thank you very much. 212-757-4488 is the number. Please call so we can say thank you very much.
And I really mean thank you, because as I said, so many times and so many times we've asked you, and there are some people who come through every time supporting what they hear here and supporting what I do. And what the station in effect does, remember, I think it's a miserable station. I think they've mismanaged themselves up to boopy. They're how horrible. They've fallen all over each other, fighting with each other. You know, at one point, the unions got so big that they had did one thing, and then later it wound up crippling the rest of them because they were stuck with union contracts. It's like over and over again decisions were made that were not good decisions. And they continue to be made because these are decisions that are going to get you through the next month. But they're not in the longer plan. The longer plan can't possibly work. So I know donors, I know big donors who would be willing to support the station if the station showed that it really meant to keep around. But it's like they're always saying, you know, we're desperate, we're desperate, we're desperate, which they are. At least that part of it is honest. And right now they're desperate. Right now they're fighting for one more month. But it's amazing to hear them fighting for one more month because they've been saying that for a long time. So I say make the call, 212-757-4488, not celebrating how great WBAI and Pacifica are, but how important they are, how important, how vital. All right, they ran the show badly, but they did a great job. 212-757-4488. You're giving that little bit of support and saying, okay, stick around a while longer. Stick around a while longer. So I was talking to you about people who become like their parents, and I was getting you to see that people look at the, they observe power and they look at power And somewhere around adolescence, we observe that our parents and see the parts that we really hate the most, like oppressive or hysterical behaviors, or we make it like, you know, our parents sick, and we make an oath to ourselves that no matter what happens, we will not become like that parent, and we will never be like them or treat our children that way, and then we go about doing it. What a thing. This makes us really hate ourselves. You see, sometimes when you hate yourself, what you're really doing is hating the parent that you've absorbed, that you've taken on. So let's say you grew up in a family where dad's only defense was not loving you, was that he had to work hard to pay the mortgage and the car payments, and that he needed to accumulate more and more money for your sake. And he was never there. And when he was still never there. And you grew up swearing that you'd never be like him. And here you are saying the same thing to your wife and children. How did that happen? Well, some programs in the brain are designed, like computer viruses, to only go off in certain situations. So if you're a good, heart-centered young adult, living a life of total integrity, when you couple the program of being a parent gets triggered, very often you can do fine as a single person, but the minute you get into a couple, the minute you have a family, this other part of you, the monster, appears. And it's tough. We always want to learn about ourselves. We always get blindsided. We get blindsided by the thing that took us on. You know, how many times do I hear from parents, did I make this problem with my child? Did I create this disorder? The answer is probably yes. Probably yes, but can we get beyond it? Can yes, now that we know you may have, what are we going to do? Have you commit suicide and put a bigger burden on your kid? Do you have to have you make up for it, which is even going to be worse? Or are you going to turn some love towards your child and let's support that child as best we can? This is Armand DeMille with the Positive Mind. So we have a lot of information to bring you like this, a lot of stuff about human functioning that you need to learn about. And we're going to continue right now with part of what's going on. A very wise man said to somebody, he said to the other person, now get this, I want you to picture this. Picture the very worst thing that could happen to you. Picture the worst thing that could happen to you. And think about it. I mean, for almost everybody, it's going to be the loss of a child or something like that. And I almost think we should throw that out of the equation as one of the worst things that could ever happen to you. Because for some reason, people go bonkers over that thought. So let's say, other than the loss of a child, we'll come back to that later. Think of the worst thing that could happen to you. You got it in your mind, Audrey? A guest here in the studio, you got one in your mind? The worst thing that could happen, worst. Can you picture it? Just nod yes, no. Yeah. Can you picture it, Lisa, right? The worst thing that can happen to you, right? Picture how you're going to survive it. Picture how you're going to get through that moment. How are you going to get through that time? How the next few months going to be? How are you going to pick yourself up after it? You get that? Now, that's a very good test of your mental stability. You see, when we think about ourselves, we think, and we talk to each other like this, you know, if you ever left me, I'd die. I would not be able to survive. I'd quit. Lovers say it so often to each other. Oh, darling. After this, there's only death. But they get through it. And you get through everything, in effect. I was watching a bug. It was just a bug. I was in a swimming pool. And there was this little bug that fell in the swimming pool. It was flapping its last flap. You know, it was doing it, and me, good old me, you know, I swim over, I pick it up in my hands, I cup the water, I put it on the side of the pool, I give it a little breeze, And I realize this thing has been through this before. I mean, I'm not the first time it's fallen in the pool and gotten picked up or gotten out of the pool because it's struggling. It didn't go in the pool and stop struggling, saying, oh, I'm in a pool, I'm going to die now. No, struggling for survival. Odds are it was going to get out of it somehow. But when we don't sense our resiliency, when we believe that we are so dependent on any one thing that we cannot survive it, our mind gets in a little bit of trouble. So this is Armand DeMille with Lisa Arnone. We're looking at the positive mind, and we're looking at people and how people develop and grow. Now, at one point in your... And this is a good opportunity, since we're looking at people, to meet with one of our donors. Hey, Gladys, this is Armand DeMille.
Hi, Armand. It's a pleasure just talking to you. I feel so honored. I'm one of your fans.
So let me ask you something, Gladys. What were you calling for? You were calling for the flash drive?
Yes, I did.
What do you hope to get from it? Let me hear that.
Well, okay, first, I'm a therapist myself. I serve children with developmental delays, and I visit their homes, and I have to address parents' feelings with a sick child or their own mixed feelings about the whole situation that they may go through. And regardless of my experience, I felt that I need an update, you know. Cause,
this is perfect.
You get burned out with so much, and then it's like the people in the parade that you mentioned. That's why people go to the parade and they look like zombies, because they lost the meaning of the purpose of being there. So I said, I need to get this drive to make sure that I can update my skills and keep going with the work that I do.
And do you do your work all at the person's home? Do you always go to somebody's home?
Yes, I visit many homes in New York with children with developmental delays, and I have all kind of races and colors and shapes, and I'm very nurturing because I understand these parents need a lot of help. And sometimes they are so troubled in their own feelings that, you have to back up and be objective in helping them.
Right. You don't go into somebody's house and say, you got to clean up this house and we got to throw out this junk. You walk in, Gladys, and tell me if this is true. You walk in and you ask yourself, what's it like to live here? You put yourself in their position and wonder what it's like to be them. Don't you do that?
Yes. And you know what? If I could share my today's experience, this morning I'm walking to a home. This mommy is almost to give birth. She has 7 children. The house was a mess. And she said, the cleaning lady didn't show up. I don't know what to do. I cannot bend. And I said, let me help you. And I said, clean up. And she said, but you don't have to. I said, but I want to. And my heart says, I need to help her because she's unable to. So this is sometimes you really, you cross the boundaries, you know, and you over-identify with the situation. Yes, when I was helping clean up and the baby was getting ready to go to school, I said to her, I don't mind helping you. I don't mind. I do it from my heart because I really care for families and children. And she was so grateful. And after I finished, I said, this is what I have to do. This is what I have to do.
You know, Gladys, yeah. I tell you, you're my kind of person. I'm so glad you're out there in the world. We'll happily send you this flash drive, and I'm going to include some other things in the package that I think would be of support to you. And if there's any way that you ever think that we could collaborate to help somebody, you know...
I do it on an outpatient basis.
You do it inpatient. You do it mostly in the homes. But yes. you're our teachers. You're great. Maybe I'll have you on the air one day. And we could
that would be a pleasure, too.
Would you like to do that?
One of the things I just wanted to take this opportunity to say that most of these children ended up in special education. And sorry to say, the Department of Education in New York City is not to say that it's the worst, but it's not the best. Okay, so what I'm saying is a lot of deficiencies when it comes to serve these children and families. And I empower them because I used to work with the Department of Ed, and I know what they're going to go through. So I empower them and I give them all the tools that they need in order for them to fight for those children, to be there for these children, and to see if the children can overcome most of their delays or difficulties. Some children will be able to. Some we know that they will have a long way to go. But the reality is that I think more needs to be done to serve these families.
Well, we'll get a chance to talk with that. I know of a few other people who do similar kind of work. I think we're going to gather them to do some coverage on it. Thank you so much for calling, Gladys.
Thank you, and keep on with your good work. And I have to say, I love your positive mind. I try not to miss it. When I'm driving, I have this station on, and I encourage everybody to call and get this drive, because even if you're not a therapist, you could use it for your own self.
That's right. Exactly right. Thank you.
Yes. Have a great day. Thank you for allowing me to be on the air.
Sure. My pleasure. That's 212-957-2729 for those of you who have received any of this and want to talk about it, or therapists also who know something about this. 212. So we're also taking your donations here at the station at 212-757-4488. See, now there are other programs that you'll hear on WBAI. This is a fun drive time. They practically even barely mention the fun drive. I just know that it's what I'm here to do. I'm going to do it. Not because I love the station, but I love what we're doing. I love it. I think it's very important. 212-757-4488. That's 212-757-4488. For a $100 donation, or $125 donation, you get the flash drive. For a $200 donation, you get a chance to meet with me personally. And let me upset you. In a few minutes, I'm going to talk to you about how you can survive when the problems get really bad. And let me talk to you a little about it now. You know, sadness is a result of a loss. Depression itself can be a chemical, or it can be self-induced chemical imbalance caused by obsessive worrying, lack of movement, and anger turned inwards. So depression, sadness, can be either chemical all on its own. You could take certain drugs, medications, or you could be all on its own. The problem is, once you're depressed, you can only see the dark side. People can't cheer you up unless they're therapists. Or people in a group, like some of the groups that are run here. Once you're depressed, you become a sourpuss. Your friends avoid you. Your partners and mates realize that you don't respond to anything, and they stop trying to help you. They even try cheering you up in some way or buying you gifts, and it's the worst thing they could do because your depression is going to hold on. Then they accept their own powerlessness in helping you, and then they get depressed.
Okay, great. So what's your
illness. You're sick. Any way that you're sick, the body pulls you into a cave. Anytime you're sick or you have a disorder of any kind, the body wants you to retreat. Ann's on the air? Oh, we have somebody else on the air. Let me take this call. Hi, Ann. This is Armand DeMille.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call, and let me begin by telling you how much I appreciate what you do. It's been very valuable to me. And then I reached a point... Not as a result, but I reached a point in my life where I got very stuck, and I'm not sure whether the flash drive content would be useful. I think it would, but here's my question. I have two adult children, one of whom is physically disabled and delayed, and my husband and I have really, really helped her develop a strong life. And I feel like we have been inventive and resourceful and tried a million and one options, but we're getting older and we're tired, and fear the fact that nothing exists for people like her and others. And we're trying to develop a new stage of our life to have a different kind of conversation, to figure out how to build community, how to understand people who work with her better. And it's a kind of vision that we have a sense of, but we don't, we just can't figure out how to take next steps.
Have you looked into consulting with somebody who's familiar with this? For example, yeah. There are groups of parents who get together to talk about, in a group, what it's like to do this and how they could best handle themselves.
Well, we have. I mean, in many cases, we've forged and pioneered all kinds of new programs, even with the state. I'm on a redesign committee with the state. But it doesn't really, the truth is it doesn't exist. It just doesn't.
What doesn't exist? What's the itch?
In many ways, I think this is like a civil rights issue in which we have the concepts, we are trying to get people with disabilities more fully included in the community, and the laws exist, and there's funding, and parents come together, but we're moving away from more institutional settings, more into community inclusion, and it's not there yet. We have to build it.
So you've done your part.
You've done
as much as your part is, and I think there's
yep.
a lot of information in here that would be of value to you. But I also suspect something else, and I'm going to have to ask you this. Can you tell me, as a child, when you were a child, who let you down the most? Which of your parents let you down?
Well, I would say my father, because he died young.
He died young. And he wasn't there for you, was he?
No.
Nope.
And I adored him.
I noticed you just got very silent. So when you think about him, you get very sad, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a part of you feels powerless.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me, Anne, who have you shared this with?
Well, my husband, certainly, yeah. and a therapist.
Yeah. And the tears still come, right? Because your dad was a wonderful guy. And he was somebody who you adored.
Yeah.
And here's what I hear in your voice. I hear in your voice somebody who's crying out and saying, why do I have to do this alone? Why can't I have, like everybody else, a strong daddy to take care of me? Not that you're looking for somebody to be your leader, but you just want to be loved. You want to be supported. You want to feel safe. Now, somehow with your husband, I'm sure you feel a good connection, but there's a feeling of safety that you're missing. So this goes beyond your activity and what you're doing. Some of this is covered in the flash drive, but you know what I would suggest? I would suggest one day that you should come in and meet with me personally, because I would like to go into this zone to see what's in there that needs repair so it could make you a little more effective at what you're doing.
I would love that. I actually called the center. It might have been when you were ill, but as of yet hadn't gotten a call back. But
okay, so here's the call back. Call the center now. In fact, call the center now and make the donation. It's half the price.
Okay.
This is the best time to do it.
And we can meet?
Yeah, you could call them back at 212-757-4488, and they will.
And they will
honor this pledge.
Okay.
Give them a call right now.
I will.
I look forward to meeting you, Anne.
I feel very much the same way. And thank you. I mean,
my pleasure.
Hit the nail on the head.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Bye.
What do you mean she's on the other line? Hi there. Oh, this is Armand. My Julian here is getting very tricky. Very, very tricky. We have more than one person. So, yes, you see how it touched Anne when she was talking and how suddenly it hit a spot? Yeah, it's an opportunity. So we're getting somebody else on the line who wanted to talk to us today. We hope we're getting them. There they are. Here we go. Donna, did that be you?
Yes, this is Donna.
Hi, Donna. Could you speak just a little louder, please?
Oh, can you hear me better?
Yeah, it's a little muffled for some reason. Are you on a regular phone?
Oh, well, actually, I have a cell phone.
Yeah. And are you anywhere where you could have a, we could have, is that the only phone you have?
Sorry.
I can't hear you. So you're going to have to go to some spot where you could stay still and we could hear you. Well, would you say, Julian, help her out?
It also may be on your cheek, your microphone.
Yeah, so you have to put, sometimes you have
try
to
adjusting your cell phone, maybe?
Adjust the cell phone so that the mouthpiece is directly in front of your mouth. A lot of people just talk from their cheek and they hope that they heard, and they are heard.
They vibrate outwards.
So, Donna, why did you make a call to us, and did you receive the flash drive?
I did receive the flash drive, thank you.
And tell me about it. What was the experience like?
Well, unfortunately, I haven't listened to the whole thing, but from the pieces that I've listened to, I just think that it's just something that is very useful. I've kind of lost touch with myself, because I think,
tell me. Tell me what you're saying. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, so you're crying now, right? You've lost touch with yourself. You're reaching.
Yeah.
You're reaching out a hand, and you're saying, "Armand, Armand, Armand. I think I'm drowning."
I guess I've gone through a lot of my life living it for other people. And I love your show, by the way, and I'm so glad that you recovered from, you know, your illness. And I really love what you do. And I heard your show, and I got the flash drive, and I didn't get to listen to the whole thing, but as I started to listen to it, there were parts of that. I heard the feelings part, and then I wanted to kind of jump to stages of growth, and I started to listen to that, and then I said, oh, wait, it sounds like it's doing it in part. So I went back, and then I listened to the integrating, and so much of it was resonating with.
Yeah, you know, and a lot of it is going to hit a sore spot, and when it hits a sore spot, it's going to make you stop listening. You know?
No. No, it wasn't that I stopped listening to it. I actually want to listen to it more. I just haven't, you know, had the time to, but it's so far from what I listened to it, I'm enthusiastic about continuing to listen to the full part of it and everything. It's just that, you know, when I heard the sounds of thinking, and I thought, oh wow, you know, it's like a lot of it is, it felt like I was forced as I was growing up to be like concrete sequential.
Yes.
And I was, you know, I was very good at math and always did things in order, whatever. And there were things that I wanted to do as a child that were really discouraged by my family.
Like and what, Donna? What did you want to do as a child?
I always loved like music and art. And
how did you want to make music? Did you want to play instruments? Did you want to sing?
I always wanted to be a singer.
Yeah, I did. I thought so. I heard that singer in your voice. Do you sing around the shower?
I sing in the shower. I sang in karaoke bars. I sang at a friend's wedding. I sang at a restaurant for New Year's. You know, people come up to me all the time. They're like, oh, you do this professionally? And I'm like, no, not really. I just do it on my spare time. And I just never really that because it was always
the what has been song. We learned this from people. What has been the one song that you seem to repeat over and over again? What's the song you fall back on that you think you do really well?
Probably Somewhere Over the Rainbow. My sister loves when she hears me do the Judy Garland version of Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
And it's not your version, it's a Judy Garland version, right?
Well, it's my cover of her version.
Okay, so what this is we're talking about Somewhere Over the Rainbow, is you're saying Donna is hoping that somewhere over this rainbow, there's going to be a place where she too feels safe, because right now she feels like she's a lost child.
Yeah, I, it's it's like all my life I've just been doing what everybody else wanted me to do, and I never really pursued my own passion.
Donna, this is going to be probably the worst sounding thing we ever did, but would you sing me 1 minute of Somewhere Over the Rainbow? But when you do it, I don't want you to close your heart. I want you to stay in your heart just the way you are. Jump right into it.
Okay.
Go for it.
Way up high, there's a land that I've heard of, once in America.
Keep going, I'm with you. Once in a lullaby. Go ahead, next step. You're doing it. First time that song was sung with a full heart, and we understand from what you said to us why that song is your favorite. Because if happiness lay somewhere, Donna says, why can't I have it? And so as you're singing here on WBAI, the only station that would allow you...